Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Further Research Needed, the auditive equivalent of a scientist's playdate. We are the podcast with straightforward questions and not so straightforward answers. I am Jan-Philipp Reising, and as always, I'm joined by my lovely co-hosts.
I'm Hannes Feurer.
And Christopher Wood.
And today, we are asking the question, what would turn us into supervillains? I got this idea just thinking about, we have this trope of the mad scientist or the scientist turned supervillain. And since all of us are doing research, I was wondering about what would actually need to happen for us to get into this kind of situation. So maybe we start about what is this trope? So what do you guys think? Like, what is, how do you get a supervillain?
I think most people in general, doesn't matter who it is, even villains act for the best interest of someone or do this convinced that they are acting for the benefit and for the best interest of a person or at least a group of people.
I agree. There's that, a common trope is the whole, we're going to kill 50% of humanity to save the other 50% in some way. And it's the Thanos narrative, I suppose.
I did not see that movie, but good to know.
I think it's not a big spoiler at this point.
Oh man, we should have said that at the start.
That's really interesting. So I thought about it the other way around. So I think for me, two things need to happen in order to create a supervillain or make a supervillain out of a scientist. There has to be some kind of accident or a very special thing to happen. And in this process, they gain some kind of power or superpower. And then they use that to do something very evil. So whatever, destroy a whole city or the planet or kill a bunch of people. So that's kind of the one aspect. But then something else has to happen on top of that, right? So you have to have some kind of change in morality. Like most of us would not go around like killing people, even if we had the ability to do so. So there's got to be some kind of injustice, at least with like super good supervillains. You have like, there's like a backstory where you feel like, oh, I understand where he's coming from. Like,
right,
this happened
exactly
to him, and that makes sense that he would kind of jump to this conclusion.
So basically, you have the two parts of it, super and villain.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Each by themselves is either just a grumpy, sad man or a hero.
Yeah, this is really interesting. So you like the difference between a superhero and a supervillain is actually pretty small if you think about it.
Just the morals.
Yeah, really.
On your point of view, because, you know, it tends to be that the superhero is a one-man or one-person band that goes and trashes an entire enterprise of hard-working, you know, evil scientist evil organization, and you know, they're contributing to society, they're buying up a lot of like laser equipment, and you know, Uzi manufacturers are very proud of them, they're employing local people to, you know, stand in the doorways of a lot of things, and you know, actually they contribute to society much more than this just this one guy who busts through doors. And
yeah, that's actually a really good point. Yeah, I think we should contribute more to evil societies. They are doing so much for the economy.
Yeah, I think there should be an economic reading of all supervillain dynamics to make sure that we're actually choosing the right side when it comes to the economy.
Yeah, that's so true. As a hero, you just come in, smash stuff up. That's like easy, but building all of that, like your super secret lair, yeah, it's hard.
It's hard. Yeah. I suppose, I mean, if you're the construction industry, though, you might like the superhero busting up a load of stuff because you've got to come in and pour more concrete afterwards and rebuild the super lair.
Oh, that's true. Okay, so for me, like the exercise of kind of trying to figure out how my own research could go so horribly wrong, and in the process, I gain some kind of inability, but also having that moral corruption aspect at the same time was really hard for me. Like, what was it like for you guys?
I went about this a different way. I got a bit focused on the power aspect of the superpower that I was going to pick. And then that has now followed onto the backstory of my supervillain personality. So I started thinking about what superpower I'd like to have as the evil villain. And I was thinking about like flight or, I don't know, laser eyes and these sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And it got me thinking about what we've talked about before, which is that you still need to be beholden to the laws of physics, right?
Mm-hmm.
So especially with flight, this comes with Superman in particular because he flies so fast. Where is he getting the energy to do what he's doing from? Is he converting his own mass into pure energy and then moving around? Because I feel like you could do a calculation of how far Superman could fly on his own mass before he would diminish to nothing. And assuming like an absolutely perfect conversion E equals MC squared of Superman's own body mass into energy. But that's, I mean, even that's kind of unrealistic, right? You're never going to get a 100% efficient process to generate your lift. So, yeah, and then like laser eyes and stuff like that, like even that's quite a lot of power. Like a lot of them shoot lasers through doors, through concrete. And that's, you know, you need terawatts of energy to do that. Like, what, you got a battery up your ass or something? I don't know. These are big problems. So that got me, pushed me away from the traditional superpowers, like super strength equally has a problem. Invulnerability, like atoms don't really work that way. What are you dining on titanium and tungsten every day to slowly build up the tungsten, like percentage of tungsten in all of your cells so that you can take a shot from a depleted uranium round? And all these things sort of kind of put me off. So I then actually went kind of a whole other way and went that what superpower do scientists really want? And I believe it's persuasion.
Ooh,
I think if you had the ability to persuade anyone of anything, this is where you would turn into an evil scientist. So, you know, it would start off, you'd say sell your soul to some sort of supernatural being, the devil, something, to gain the power of persuasion. Not for evil purposes, just so you could write the next grant and get it, you know, funded. And also to like convince your supervisor that you're right to do the right experiment and this sort of thing. But then slowly that would bleed into your research and maybe you made a mistake on an assay or whatever, and you'd persuade people that you were right about the assay, even though it was wrong. And then slowly you trickle down to becoming fully evil. And it also helps, once you're fully a full evil scientist, having persuasion allows you to organize your army of grunts and, you know, all the underlings that being an evil scientist is, you need. So actually quite powerful. You can become like an evil world leader, so on and so forth. So that was my superpower and / backstory thing that turns out not to really be a superpower. But
that's such a good idea, because I was struggling with like a similar thing. I was thinking like, what kind of, like with the standard superpowers that you have, they are like useless these days. Like if you are invisible, like what are you going to do? I mean, that's not like supervillain stuff. Or if you're like super strong, like what does that actually mean? Like I can pull a gun and just shoot you. Like how strong would you have to be to actually deal with that? And then, I mean, with all the military we have, like all of these like super, even with flight, like what are you, how are you going to be a supervillain if you can fly? I mean, we have airplanes and...
Isn't that how many superheroes are, even in the cinema in the last 10, 20 years? I mean, the Avengers are still largely engaged in fist fights, right?
But if you think about it, that's like stupid, right? Like
I agree.
It would not turn out that way in reality if you'd... Like if I were super strong and I wanted to destroy a whole city, like how would I pull that off? Like I'd be like, there's no way for me to do actual damage. Like I could kill a couple of people maybe if I really wanted to, but then you're going to have police or the army or someone is going to stop me and just put me in prison. Like you're just going to have to come up with more and more abilities to actually counteract society's like defenses, basically.
Mm.
So that was really difficult for me.
They tend to not, they they tend to gloss over the kind of, if you're super strong, you tend to also somehow be invulnerable to bullets. So that avoids the whole problem of the army. You get like a load of subsidiary power that makes it necessary to have fist fights again, that like, yeah, swords can't cut you or, you know, whatever. So that they can then engineer the fist fight into the equation.
Yeah, it's so weird. But even if you say, okay, he's bulletproof, then what? They're going to just pull out a flamethrower or something else. I mean, like, you just, yeah, it, like, even if you have all of this, like, your ability, like, using them effectively is going to be so limited. Like, you're going to walk into a bank and do what? Like, steal physical gold? What are you going to do with it? Like, you would have to be, like, a super hacker to, like, that's what I was thinking about. You would have to be, like, a super hacker to do actual damage. Then you could actually bring down, like, states or the whole globe if you had. But that's not a superpower in and of itself. Like, what would be the superpower that you're good at hacking?
In theory, there are people already who can do that.
Yeah, exactly. And you wouldn't say that, like, a hacker is, like, a super villain in that sense. He's just, like, an IT nerd like we.
just speak for yourself. I cannot even code.
So, yeah. But
it's like, look at him. He doesn't pay for airline travel. Wow. That's amazing.
All right. So, I think we, like, talked about the trope now and what we think of it, what, like, makes a mad scientist supervillain. So, maybe we just jump into our solutions. Maybe, Hannes, you start. And then
I feel like Chris already gave away his bit, or was it not it yet?
That was it.
Yeah, that was kind of it. I can continue.
But I think we can get back to Chris's point and kind of, like, delve a bit more deeply into it.
Absolutely. So when Philip gave us this homework, what would turn me into a supervillain, or what would it take to turn me into a supervillain? I started thinking of exactly these two points that you mentioned. What would make me super and what would make me a villain? Because right now I'm neither.
So,
Is this like fishing for compliments now, Hannes?
Yeah.
What?
You're pretty evil, Hannes.
Hannes, you're super. You're fantastic.
Thank you.
I went the other way.
I wasn't going for that, but thank you. And I started approaching the villain thing first, because I think I approached the superpower thing a bit like you guys did and didn't really want to just choose any of the regular superpowers, because I find them, I don't know, a bit weird. So I started to think what would it take to shake my moral ground. And for me, as a scientist, I think what it would take to make me not a scientist anymore is being disappointed in the scientific progress. So often as scientists, we see our work as just one of many tiny cogs in the whole machinery of science, right? And we kind of hope that we will have some contribution in the future, but you can never really be certain, right? Mm-hmm. You might just be tested, fail, and then nothing happens. However, in my story, I have an invention that absolutely works, that will change the world. I am convinced it will change the world for the better and to save everyone off. In this case, climate change, I would say. And what turns my morals is that the scientific community completely rejects my invention and calls it evil and says it's not going to work and it's not going to do any good for anyone. And that's what turns me in the end and basically makes me give up on the scientific community, on the work with one another, because in the end, as scientists, we rely on everyone else, right? We publish our work to everyone else so they can read it. And also we have our work fact-checked, peer-reviewed by other scientists. And I'm going to give up on all of this and just go rogue and do everything by myself.
I'm interested in this because implicit in what you're saying at the moment is that the scientific community is good. That as a community, we are aiming towards doing good, which is interesting.
I think we do. Doesn't mean we always do, and there might be exceptions here and there. I mean, there are people actively working in biological warfare. But other than that, most people, other than paying their bills, they want to do good, I'm sure.
But I think even those people, feel like they are doing something good for society, right? You kind of spin this narrative of going, well, I'm producing maybe a better weapon, but this is just to
prevent
future. future war or something.
That's why biowarfare is called biodefense today.
Yeah, so branding, basically.
Yeah, exactly. But let me continue. I did come up with a hypothetical invention in the process. Because I, as you guys, I also want to have a superpower, just don't want to be a villain. And the invention, keep in mind, this is science fiction, is centered around a protein we talked about in the past. At some point, we talked about the protein Rubisco, which fixes CO2 from the atmosphere and turns it into biological carbon in plants. It's a highly inefficient protein, but I find a way to improve the efficiency and somehow engineer it into a nanocell, something like a tiny artificial bacterium which traps a lot of CO2 from the air using photosynthesis as an energy source, and this way can trap CO2 or get rid of excess CO2 from the atmosphere. And I'm sure if we immerse these in tiny droplets, have them in clouds, we can get rid of a major CO2 problem in all over the planet, and this way fix climate change. Furthermore, because these things grow, then these tiny particles, at some point they will be dropping back on Earth, and then we can use them, can use the highly energetic matter CO2, which was before a very low energy molecule, now is in an organic molecule, which we can use again to generate energy or food. And this obviously solves all the problems, right?
That would be really nice. I'm thinking about if we should patent this right now.
Yeah, let's start tomorrow. On the other hand, no one can know what happens. And that's, I think, why the scientific community rejects the idea. Because the risk is kind of high. The bacterial systems, or whatever you want to call them, they might at some point evade our control and replicate, mutate, do whatever. And of course, I'm convinced they can control them, but what if you can't? To start with, and second, at some point you need to move to large-scale experiments. You need to release them, at least in a larger area, not just in a lab, and see what effect this actually has on CO2 in the atmosphere, on the ground below, on the ecosystem, on the carbon cycles, and all of this. And this, of course, is rejected by everyone, by scientists, by policy, even by big companies who would see their business endangered because all of a sudden we have something else to base this on, and I don't want to share. So once I'm convinced that I have to do this by myself and that everyone hates me and doesn't give a shit about saving the planet because only I am, I also I can engage in crime to get the money for my enterprise, because obviously you need a lot of money for it. So all of a sudden, all the basic things like human trafficking, weapons, and all of this, I'm completely down.
Human trafficking.
Wow. Whatever makes money, right?
Okay.
In this hypothetical.
So you're like just trafficking scientists.
All of them do. All the big villains, they are somewhere involved in human trafficking. Or drugs, of course, and all these things. All of them are.
So for all the listeners, please, this is just a hypothetical. Don't call the police on Hannes just yet.
Please don't take this out of context. I'm kind of bad for saying this now. Yeah, and that's kind of the idea of my hypothetical supervillain.
Okay, that's really interesting. So, it's a really nice plot. I can feel like if you watch that movie, you have like your superhero, then kind of like, oh no, if he releases it, the whole city will whatever, blah, blah, they will replicate and suck out all the carbon dioxide, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Bad thing will happen in like the worst case scenario, and then there's like this final showdown between the superhero and you just explaining why this is important, and the superhero is but what are the risks? So yeah, I really like the idea.
How does this showdown go about? Do you just like write papers back and forth and discuss? And
it's just like a Twitter feed that you follow. Exactly. As the reader.
Yes. I do. I like it because I think the end state of this is like this Earth covered in just one slimy, like enhanced Rubisco organism.
Right.
Just a red
just hovering
slime
in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Just controlling everyone.
And all life on Earth is asphyxiated. Mm. Well, all plants are asphyxiated.
Right.
Well, not asphyxiated, but like deprived of their CO2. Evil. I'm intrigued that both of our triggers for evilness are that lack of funding. and this implies that society funds its scientists because if it didn't, they would just go mental and start killing everybody. Like, it's just a sort of, you know, crime prevention measure to have scientific funding out
there. Right, now we made this. If you stop funding us, you're just going to drop the vial and just walk away.
Yeah,
exactly. I think for the next grant we're writing, we should just link to this episode and going, listen, I mean, you should really give us money. We went through all the horrible things that could happen otherwise.
So, Philip, what's your thing? What's your story?
Okay, so I went about it from a different perspective. I was thinking about what am I working with in the lab and what could go wrong. So what do I have actually access to? And I'm not working with a lot of like radiation or anything, like a super standard thing that could happen, but I'm working with viruses. And the thing is, usually they're super, super safe. So the way we use viruses in the lab is that they cannot replicate in humans, for example. Like, they can replicate in a single cell, but then they can't jump from cell to cell. So they're basically stuck in the initial entry point, and then they can't do any harm. So, like, even if you would inject you with, like, a standard virus, it might go through your bloodstream and then infect a couple of cells, but all of these cells would just die and be replaced by new cells, and then nothing happens. So the first kind of thing that needs to happen is that I kind of get contaminated with a virus where someone really fucked up. And that might be either me or like someone else in the lab, which might be like a nice trope. So either way, I kind of get infected with that virus and it's somehow able to replicate, which is like a really bad thing. And the problem with that is not necessarily like the virus itself, because they are, yeah, usually quite benign, but that you would get a lot of viruses, cancer, sorry. So in that case, what are you kind of left with? Now you're just infected with a virus that gives you a lot of cancer. And the angle why I'm turning into this evil supervillain is that no one is helping me. So basically the university is saying, oh, well, it was not our fault. We have all these safety precautions and you didn't like follow them. So it's your fault. And the health insurance system is saying, well, it's the university's fault. If you get infected with something at work, we're not going to pay. So I'm basically just left with a high probability of getting cancer at some point and no one is helping me. So I naturally, you would feel like super frustrated and kind of angry with the system, which gives you like the angle of unfairness and kind of my anger towards the system in general that should protect us scientists. But when push comes to shove, actually, in a lot of instances, does not do their job correctly. But now I can't really do anything, right? So the superpower is that I personally work with astrocytes in the brain. So the idea would be that this virus contains something that messes with the astrocytes in the brain. And there are a couple of studies showing that, for example, if you give human astrocytes to mice, they get a lot smarter. So my idea is
that's cool.
That somehow this virus unintentionally changes the astrocytes in a specific way. And what you can do, for example, is add an artificial receptor that you can activate with an artificial compound, like a drug that isn't naturally produced by any organism. So it's really nice for science because you have this system with a receptor that does something and nothing else in the body can interfere with it. So you specifically can activate or deactivate cells, for example. So in my case, for my supervillain idea, it would have this receptor, they would go into the astrocytes, and it turns out that if I take that compound, I can increase for a limited amount of time until the drug is removed from my system, I get very, very smart. So it's basically hyper-intelligence.
You turn into Lucy.
Yeah, pretty much.
And what a horrible movie.
And we did a whole episode how I hate this trope. But yeah. I feel like it's a bit nicer if you have this mechanism that you need this drug, right? I'm not saying, oh, you're kind of like changing something. There's like a mutation in the genome and that's why. But you have to have this like fine-grained control. So it'd be like, I need access to this drug and I need to kind of all the time supply myself with more drug and kind of get addicted to it to try to push myself to the level. And then usually what, like in reality, if you would try this out, what would happen is that it might work in the short term, but you mess with a whole bunch of stuff in the brain, which is never a good idea. So it would basically lead to mental illness. So that's kind of like normal scientist has this science experiment that goes wrong and then takes more and more drug to kind of get revenge on the system that didn't help him in the first place and turns himself mad in the process.
So what do you do with your hyperintelligence?
I have no idea. So I didn't write the full script. But I mean, if you're hyperintelligent, I would assume you can fuck some shit up if you wanted to.
But you could equally become nice and cure cancer. That would be the quickest system to finish this.
But I mean,
maybe you cure cancer, but you don't give it to anyone else. So,
but I think
just to punish them,
you're super smart. You still need to do the experiments to actually cure the cancer, right?
Yeah.
But just using your
does this feed back into Hannes's thing where you don't get funding to do that? So then you get pissed.
Yeah, in my mind, like I would get like maybe cancer within 3 to 6 months. So you kind of have a time limit, and then it doesn't really matter, right? You can just like there are no more moral consequences if you die, since I'm not assuming there's going to be an afterlife and there's not going to be a judgment day. If you die and you're like really pissed off at something and you have the power to do something about it, maybe you'd be more inclined to actually take revenge on someone.
So it's about revenge, not about doing bad out of joy.
No, exactly. I think it's about taking revenge. And then you might have this like mental health issue on top of it that you're kind of like going mad in the process because you're messing with your brain chemistry.
I can see that like after the initial sales from this comic book and the film rights, there could be a revisionist film, a lot like the recent Joker film, which doesn't invoke any superpowers at all. And it's just a scientist who thinks he's been infected with something and is going to die of cancer from his work, and drinks more and more coffee and becomes more and more depressed and angry at society for leading him down this dead-end job that he thinks is killing himself. And then at the end, it's just a discussion on scientists' lives in the lab and how they're mistreated.
Yeah, for sure. I didn't know that the Joker was initially a scientist that was kind of forced to do evil.
No.
But that's not in the new Joker movies, but in the initial origin story of the Joker, he's like a scientist that I think he has like debt or something, and he needs to work for the mafia, and something goes wrong, and Batman catches them, and his family dies in the whole process. But
But Batman's family died, and he turned out nice, so. It's not that isn't an excuse.
But
to
it's a thin
evil.
Line. I mean, he has this. He's insanely rich. Has this enterprise. Has all the weapons. It might just like take just one switch that someone flicks, and he's on the other side.
Yeah.
It depends on your point of view, right? Maybe Batman just has a better PR company than the other giant.
Yeah.
Organization with lots of men and material to fight with.
I mean, on the surface, Batman is just running around beating people up, which is like not really sanctioned by society, right? In most cases, unless you're working in like MMA fights or something.
Right.
But yeah, that was my idea. And yeah, Chris, so you already talked about your idea. So your power would be like super persuasion, basically, right?
Yeah.
Do you have any idea how you would get that?
I suppose if you were a psychologist, if you studied human behavior and you found a way to short circuit certain distrustful nature in the human body. That would be the start. So you start off with, say, mice, and you'd find a compound that caused the mice to be less trusting, or sorry, more trusting, and so on and so forth. You could build up a suite of tools that would allow you to convince anyone of anything.
So do you release, do you secrete a pheromone that makes everyone super super trusting towards you?
Yeah, so this would be, are you limited to in-person interactions, or could you convince people via the medium of
That would be interesting, because if you
TV
couldn't do it via the internet, you just had to, like, just, oh, I'm just submitting my grant application in paper, here it is. Like, could I quickly talk to the science board, just like, get my name out there?
But I think there's the supervillain. It's like for this Netflix show, what is the name?
It's Jessica Jones.
Yeah, Jessica Jones, right?
Yeah, that's a cool one.
That's his superpower, I think. He has like mind control, basically. And if you have
everyone
very strong
follows what persuasion, any order he gives.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. And I think, if I remember correctly, they are talking about pheromones, that he's kind of like, he has like an area effect, and it doesn't...
Does it work via telephone?
Oh, maybe it's something in his voice?
I think I'm not sure. Oh, and it only lasts like 12 hours or so. There was something.
Yeah, but that would be maybe the same for your idea, Chris, right? That you have like there's a time effect, or you have to be in contact.
There are examples of this. So subliminal messaging was investigated, and there's a reason why they're banned from flashing images into TV shows. Certain particular, if you put the image, the advert, basically in for a very short amount of time, so your conscious brain doesn't realize it's seen the branding, Coca-Cola or whatever, but it's been subliminally put into your mind, you tend to buy more Coca-Cola afterwards. I mean, it is a technique that has been banned in advertising,
right?
Because it's not
considered. This has been
fair.
Picked up by a HBO series that I don't want to mention now because it's kind of a major spoiler, but this was a pretty good one.
But like, how good is that research? Because I heard about that as well, but I didn't read it in a scientific paper. So, and it's got to be like in the 70s or 80s, right?
It was in the 70s and 80s. It was based around like the development of more scientific methods of looking at advertising anyway, and what you can do with it. And it's not like the science fiction has taken that to mean you can like tell someone to go kill someone. Subliminally, but it's not really that. It's more that people are all like in the back of their brain, they're like, oh, I think I feel really hungry now, I'd like some crisps, or oh, I need a Coke, and that's just about it. There's no like, you can't do very complicated stuff with people's brains. Like at some point you do need, you know, a list of instructions or something like that.
Right.
No, definitely true. But yeah, you're right. That's like such a strong superpower, and it's such a good idea on it, because you could do almost anything, because you could like walk into the right rooms where the decisions are made, right? Like maybe you couldn't push the button for the nuclear detonation, but you could get into the office for the guy who has it and then just talk to him and maybe suggest that he could do it, right? So it's just...
But then being evil, you're sort of limited by being evil, because once you have the power of persuasion, you might as well just run for government, and then you control the country, and, you know, you're pretty much their dictator for life if you can convince anyone of anything.
Right, yeah. So that's
via radio.
Interesting in comparison with this... I forgot the guy's name. Something with Grave or so. Kilgrave in Jessica Jones. Because he didn't strive for anything. He just wanted to have a chill life, just have nice things and have women to sleep with. And this is basically all he wanted. And this destroyed their lives, these people who were under his influence for a while. And then some of them, Jessica, started seeking revenge later. But other than that, there wasn't much to it. Like, he didn't run for any office. He didn't try to control governments or anything.
But I think...
I've actually...
But you would, Chris. You would.
I've just realized this actually plays into something I'm fascinated by anyway, which is like cults and how cults are generated. Mm-hmm. Because there are some great documentaries on Netflix or whatever about these cults. And the thing that I never understand is how people are persuaded to go against their own interests and to join these giant organizations. And I suppose it's true as well if you're an evil mastermind. You know, how do you keep all of your underlings working for you and, you know, doing everything to the letter of your orders?
Yeah.
You do need to be very persuasive. Like,
yeah, definitely charismatic, for sure. Yeah.
Mm.
But if you think about the movie, from your idea, it would basically be like a dystopian society where you have this super charismatic leader that you can't, like, the moment you listen to, you're kind of enthralled and you do whatever he says. So you have this, like, underground movement that, like, never listens to anything.
Oh.
Of fear that he
can't. Yeah, just secondary them. Sources.
Oh, yeah. That would be a really nice movie.
Yeah. Okay, until next week, let's start writing our screenplays.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this was really fun. Your ideas were pretty amazing. Definitely worth to make a book or a movie out of it. And for me, I think I learned that it's way harder to kind of come up with the stuff and, like, think of all the different things that need to come together to have, like, the corruption and the ability and that kind of stuff.
It is, yeah, it's harder to make a wholly plausible story. Because you need that if you're going to have a supervillain who isn't just, the devil in some other form.
Yeah.
You need a reason why.
I think we talked about this in the other sci-fi episode that we had, but I was always very opposed by supervillains who only want to do evil, or even better, some interdimensional entity which just wants to destroy all of life because that's what it does.
Mm.
I always disliked it very much.
I feel like it's also maybe like a recent development. Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like that villains have gotten more depth in, like, maybe the last 20, 30 years or so.
I don't think that would hold, but
okay, yeah, sure. I'm not gonna.
I agree. I think the whole good and evil thing has completely now. It needs to be shades of and. A discussion of the evil in most TV shows. I suppose not the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Although with Thanos, they just started to touch on that area that maybe the evil guy wasn't the evil guy in the end. And it's kind of interesting.
This concludes our discussion on supervillains and how we would turn into one. If you're interested in becoming a supervillain, there's definitely further research needed. Moo-ha-ha-ha-ha! Thank you for listening, and we hope you tune in next time for our discussion, Is Science Education Fit for Purpose? If you want to send comments, questions, or feedback, you can get in touch on Twitter at frn-podcast or send us an email, contact@frn-podcast.com. Also, consider subscribing to the podcast in your favorite podcast app or check out our Patreon. See you in 2 weeks.